Visiting today with Dan Hallstrom, U.S. Meat Export Federation President and CEO. You were just talking to the Oklahoma Beef Council, and you mentioned the goal here is to increase the profitability of U.S. beef, pork, and lamb. So, big question, how are we doing?
Well, I think year-to-date through August in 2021 here, we're on record pace. Business is demand is booming. And it's broad-based demand. It's Japan, it's Korea, it's Mexico, but then it's also some emerging markets like a place like Colombia and Peru and some of the Central American countries. So I think the real moral of the story here, and of course I left out China, but China's also a big boomer this year. So it's broad-based demand is really contributing to this record growth.
Well, you mentioned China. So how is that looking going forward? We're seeing a boom now, but does it still look pretty good for the future?
Yeah, I think it is. We're going to finish. Our estimate is that we're going to finish up this year for China at about $1.6 billion in sales, which would make it our third largest market. Probably the growth rate will taper down a little bit into 2022, but it's still a very positive trend line, and it's going to be interesting to watch because it's always good to have China in the mix. Not so much because it's China, but it helps to. It helps to really drive that value with the other Asian markets because the product mix is similar between Japan, Korea, China. So this is the exciting part and part of the reason we're probably going to come in this year at $10 billion in sales globally for U.S. beef, which would be by far a new record.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about how COVID has changed the market, kind of for some bad reasons, but also for some pretty good reasons.
Oh, yeah. It's forced a lot of change. We're just now coming out of COVID-19 lockdowns in Asia. Japan and Korea, for the last year, have had very limited food service capabilities at sit-down restaurants. This is an opportunity because Joel Haggard, our gentleman in charge of the Asia region, calls it revenge spending. So we're going to see some rebound in food service. But the one thing that's happened is that the online e-commerce business has just boomed globally, but especially in Asia, in places like Korea and Japan. And I think a lot of this trend towards whether it's online pickup or online delivery, I think a lot of this stays, even with the return back to whatever the new normal is for food service.
Well, you mentioned port issues, and we've been fighting this for a while, but a lot of folks are not aware that these are where kind of a lot of our problems are stemming from when it comes to exports.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're up 18% year-to-date. We should be higher. Mm-hmm. Why? Because there's this issue with, and it's not just the West Coast ports. It's really all the major ports are backed up to some degree, and it's not just in the U.S. It's globally. Mm-hmm. China, South China especially, has huge backups in their ports. So this is not an easy issue. I mean, it's a very complex issue. It's a combination of not only shortages of containers, but shortages of truckers to move the containers, shortages of chassis to load the containers on. And then there's this incentive to increase the number of empties that are loaded out of the West Coast to go back to Asia. And you might think, well, why is that? Because they can load an empty much quicker than they can load a full one. And why would they do that? Well, because the freight rates are so, the much higher freight rate coming from Asia back here. Now that's normalizing a bit. We're seeing the freight rates here go up quite a bit. We're seeing the Asian ones come down a bit. Economics in the end will improve this situation. But in the meantime, we need to continue to work with Pacific Maritime Commission and the groups that have oversight to, number one, increase hours. That's something that's being done as we speak in Long Beach and in L.A., increase the hours, maybe have some waivers on over-the-road limits on weights, things like this. So the good news in all this is that we're getting awareness around the issue, and there is quite a bit of effort being done to try to improve it.
What can producers do to help with this particular issue?
Well, I think letting your congressman know that this is out there, your elected officials in D.C., even though they may not have direct oversight, they are in constant communication with the groups like the Pacific Maritime Commission. So I think this sort of thing, saying, hey, you know, it's tough out there, but this one area of exports has really been a bright spot. But, hey, we've got this issue over here we need help on. This is the sort of help that we could use.
So you mentioned telling our story. So what is USMEF doing right now to tell the story of American beef, and why is that so important?
Well, number one, the story is one of we care about our production and our quality and our safety. That's number one. Number two is that, there's this misperception out there that everyone has a 100,000 head feedlot. And this is, to some degree, intentionally painted by some of our competitors globally. So we're out there trying to tell the story that, in fact, the U.S. beef industry is very much a family farm scenario. You know, we don't have the huge staffs of people. We have, you know, the mother, the father, the kids, and the uncle, and in a lot of cases, that's the staff. And this sort of story resonates very well, whether it's in a Japan, a Korea, or a Mexico. And it's trying to tell the real-life story around not only the safety of our products, but the way and the care and the handling of our products, the emphasis we put on that, is really what we're trying to do.
And you mentioned some partnerships with the Oklahoma Beef Council. Tell us a little bit about how those are working.
Oh, yeah. Oklahoma Beef Council has been fantastic to work with. We've been partnering with them for years now, and it was an honor to be able to come and visit to their meeting today. Yeah, they've picked out projects, you know, in a variety of markets that we work together on, Japan, Korea, Africa. But the real key here is that, you know, whether it's Oklahoma Beef or the checkoff in general, the beef checkoff really, from our point of view, has just been phenomenal to work with. And investing those dollars over time has definitely moved the needle and increased awareness and increased throughput globally. We're going to, like I said earlier, we're looking at a record pace this year, estimating right now for the year $10 billion in exports globally. The previous record was a little over $8 billion.
Talk a little bit about some of the new targets or the latest targets that we're looking at.
Yeah, some of these emerging developing regions like Central America, South America, Africa is probably another one that's maybe a little further off, but not that far away. Vietnam is another one, Southeast Asia, Philippines. These are all areas that show a lot of promise for growth. And it takes time, but it's not going to take a lot of time. I mean, you have emerging middle classes in a lot of these markets. And what happens when these middle classes start to emerge, they usually want a higher level, a higher quality level of food. And, you know, maybe they're existing on rice or chicken today. Eventually, they're going to want to up that and increase it, the quality level to something like grain-fed U.S. beef.
Well, looking forward, what do you see as some pretty good wins or opportunities coming up?
Well, I think one potential win coming up is this rebound that we're hoping to see in Asia with food service. You know, a year is a long time to really not have a lot of these restaurants open in the normal sense of the word. So that's an opportunity in and of itself. But I think this some of these changes with the e-commerce are here to stay. And like I said, whether it's delivery, pickup, some amalgamation in between, convenience was a factor before COVID, and the desire for convenience and delivery of high-quality products, it's even more so now post-COVID. So I think that's some exciting stuff that's here to stay, and it's not just in the big markets. We're seeing a lot of e-commerce platforms pop up in places like Colombia. Mm-hmm. So it's a global phenomenon. It's going to be interesting to watch it play out.
Well, Dan, thanks so much for visiting with us today. Good to finally meet you.
Yeah, thank you. My pleasure.